So I'm going to introduce the first panelist, and Stefan Meshkit could not attend, so it's just the two of us today. This is Joe Orr, and in his own words.
Hi. Yeah, I'm Joe Orr. I'm a contractor in New York City. I've done a lot of work in the financial industry. Recently, I'm specializing in Ajax, and I'm working at the New York Times helping develop a widget framework, which we're going to look at.
And my name is Lindsay Simon. I work at Google as a web developer, and I've been there about 2 months now. But originally, I'm from Austin, Texas, and I've done a lot of startup work here and worked at the Austin Chronicle, the newspaper. So it's kind of nice to be home for a little bit. So I'm going to take a little poll of to kind of get a sense of where you guys are at. And so how many of the people here had never heard of XSLT before today? Are coming to the panel. All right. How many of you have used XSLT in the past on a project? Okay. How many of you are using XSLT now in a current project? Okay, a lot. And how many of you are here simply because of the preposterous title for this panel? Good. Good. That's good. And, so how many of the folks here can explain why an SGML parser would be slower than the XML parser? Okay. Take a crack at it. Go for it.
SGML parser is just doing a lot more work. You've got to figure out what the underlying markup stuff
means. Right. So that's kind of a good place to start. The way browsers work is that they download HTML files or something that's marked up, typically HTML, and they were designed to accept tag soup, meaning you can have start tags that may not end, as in the case of the old paragraph or the break tag that you might remember from a couple years ago. And the SGML parser has to be pretty smart and allocate a lot of memory to keeping tokens in track. And so it knows, oh, this thing opened. This thing opened. Wow, this thing must have closed, even though it didn't actually close because it just can't go here. That's just not right. So the SGML parser has to do a lot more work than, say, the XML parser, which expects well-formed HTML or XML, meaning every tag that opens closes. So in essence, the XML parser can produce a DOM much faster than the SGML parser, sometimes 2, 3, and 10 times faster. And so that's kind of a good place to start with XSLT, because XSLT works on a XML DOM. So our first slide is a pig with lipstick. And the idea is, you know, we're going to put some lipstick on the pig today. We're going to make XSLT a little prettier, a little more exciting. And some of you are already using it. No, it has a place. So if you don't know the pig with lipstick analogy, the idea is it's you wouldn't want to kiss it, but maybe if you dolled it up a little bit, looks a little prettier. This one's actually a science project, and the green is a coincidental match. That's the real pig's nose. So there's a quote under here that I'm going to read because I think it's a good thing to keep in mind as well. And it's by David Jacobs, and notice that this is 5 years ago. Unless the method of teaching and the common style of use for XSLT is radically changed to make it more accessible, XSLT will be relegated to niche status like SGML and other powerful technologies. And I think to some extent that seems to have happened a little bit. As XSLT has not surged in massive popularity, it's still used, but it seems a little bit niche still. So what we're sort of here today to discuss is why XSLT should be part of your toolkit as a developer. And say, unlike cascading style sheets, XSLT can do things like add new elements to the page. It can rearrange things. It can, you know, reorder them. And essentially the way it works is you start with XML, you apply this thing called an XSLT style sheet, which is just a file with rules, and you end up with decorated XML, or sometimes undecorated XML. It depends what you're doing, but you essentially repurpose the original document, usually for presentation, and that's most of what we're going to talk about. XSLT can be easy to learn in program. It's a rule-based language, and it's easy if you take the functional and a non-procedural approach. And for example, the if-else statement is sort of a classic if-else, you know, it's a classic procedural approach to programming. If-else and for each are, you know, sort of looping logic mechanisms that work in XSLT but don't really take advantage of the thing that XSLT was designed for and what makes it good. But they can do it. The XSLT processor is actually compiled and built into most of the major browsers and is available in different ways in IE and Firefox greater than 1.2, actually. And Opera 9 XSLT engine is available to the JavaScript engine. And so you can call it dynamically. It's also available via XML itself. It can call style sheets and run them. And XML is not going away. JSON is definitely a popular data format these days, but a lot of services already provide XML. And you have to ask yourself, how much is it really necessary to reconvert this good data format into something, you know, that, you know, take the processor time to reconvert it and reuse it again? Is that really necessary? And I think that XML offers a lot of strength when you're talking with semi-structured data, specifically not super organized where everything's in the same place in the node tree. And that's something that JSON is not quite as good at. So there's also a lot of new technologies. We're going to try to touch on a couple of those for the semantic web, where XSLT definitely has a place right now. And it's sort of one of the easier ways to convert back and forth. So this is a quick XSLT refresher. We're not going to spend very much time on the code for this. But to give you an example, this over here would be the XML, say, from a database, two rows of records returning result. So you have a results node followed by a result node with two fields in there, ID and label, ID and label. And this starts to look like it would make a good select box if you were trying to reformat it. So this might be something you call via AJAX or, you know, some mechanism to get the data. And now you want to put it in a select box on your page. So this would be the XSL style sheet to produce that. You match at the root of the document. You go down. You output a select. You loop down each of the result objects. And notice here, this chunk right here is something, this is essentially a selector. And it's selecting out just each one of these. We're outputting an option tag here with an attribute of the ID with its value, and then the label. And you get something like this. So, you know, you can decide for yourself. But as you can see, this is kind of hard to read. It's nested presentation within some amounts of logic. It's not very friendly on the eyes. And this is something Joe's going to touch on a lot. So we're going to jump right into some demos. You know, we kind of talked last night about some different stuff, and we decided we were talking too much. We were kind of putting ourselves to sleep, convincing each other that XSLT really was cool. You know, that, you know. So we gave up on that, and we just decided we're going to show you some demos and take some questions and see kind of where we get, and show you some projects that are currently using XSLT in ways that are interesting. The first one's going to be mine. And it's kind of how I got into XSLT in the browser. And what you see here are two ways to instantiate a component for a web page, typically. There's sort of a pure JavaScript way where you take all your data, you turn it into a JavaScript array, then you make some variables, you call a class somehow, and then you write it out to the page. This is actually the code, a simplified version of the code to create a grid called the Active Widget Grid. And it's one of the best grid components out there. But I don't actually like using it this way. I find it kind of annoying. If you don't have JavaScript turned on, you get nothing on the page. And, you know, which is not that big of a problem, but it's not that extendable to write this out dynamically every time you want to do a grid. And then there's sort of a pure, what I'm calling the PHP way. This could be done in any server-side language, where you instantiate some object on the server. You do basically the same thing, and you call a render method that outputs a ton of HTML. So I kind of don't like each of these for different reasons. So I'm going to go ahead and just give you a demo of this one. We'll see if we get some wireless. So you can go to this URL. This is a public URL if you're interested. And what we're looking at is this is sort of a demo of how this component works. And I'll show you another example of just using it. But initially, we're going to go fetch 20 rows of data from the server. And this would be something you might do with Ajax or perhaps just straight on the page. And if you look at this code, it's hard to read because it's all in this text box. But essentially, what you see is just a table with a particular class, some standard table style attributes, and then table headers and table cells. Nothing weird here, a totally normal table that will validate. And you see down here is the default presentation in the browser. One column's aligning right. The other columns are all just displaying data straight down. The TH is straight in the middle. This is the default. This is with no style sheet. So what we're going to do is there's actually an XSL file that's cached on the browser right now. And I'm going to basically just click a button and do it in JavaScript to take the table, reread the contents of the HTML on the page, and run the style sheet against an XML DOM that it creates in JavaScript. And what you see now in the text area is a whole bunch of decorated HTML with a whole bunch of stuff that you probably wouldn't want to write by hand, but that's pretty logical to do for a component. And, you know, so you see a whole bunch of, it's inferred a whole bunch of values like how big the container width should be, how big each column width should be. It sort of figured this stuff out for you based on some things you can put into the original HTML and things it just figures out on the page because it's available to the DOM already. So why I wanted to do this originally was I wanted to make, you know, a component that you could do cool stuff with, like resize columns. And, you know, originally the main purpose of this was I wanted to prove that you could take the Scriptaculous sortable component and rearrange table columns with it. And with some CSS magic, you can actually do that. And I think it's kind of a nice-looking interaction for dragging things around. There's a ton of ways to do this, but I thought this one would be fun to do. And that's where I started with the component. The other thing you would notice here, it's hard, maybe hard to read on the screen, but down here you can see pre-XSLT, the size of the file that we downloaded from the server was 2.6K. That was just the standard table, sort of a regular old table. After the XSLT, the size of this thing is now 7.2K. So we saved 5K by running it on the client. Now, we did have to download the style sheet once, and it's cached, so you lose some amount of bandwidth just to get the style sheet the first time. But now, anytime I want to do this again, I've got this thing in memory. So in that sense, you can think of it as a way to maybe save bandwidth sometimes if you have XSLT on the client, and it's just kind of fun and cool. So I'll show you one other demo that kind of illustrates it well to me, too. And this is just, if you imagine you already have a page that has a table on it, and you just want to, you know, you want to write three lines of JavaScript, in theory, and turn it into the component, you can do that pretty easily and dynamically. Hold on, I'll just show it locally, so that we don't have to wait for the internet. Okay. So very much like the demo before, but just imagine you've got some, you know, a couple of tables on the page. This is the only code you actually need to write in JavaScript to do this. And you run it, and now you've got down here two tables on the page done in the same style as a component that's reusable. So it's just kind of fun to see the magic of taking something so simple with a class and turning it into a component. And to me, this is sort of a microformat approach to components, and it's something that I found interesting in the Dojo toolkit. They use a page scanner to read all the HTML and then go and apply things to the DOM that way, although they use JavaScript to do it, and so consequently the Dojo table component's really slow if you have, say, 100 rows. The XSLT component scales amazingly well. If you back on the slides show, I have a link to the demo with a paper about this component, as well as some metrics, and the XSLT is stunningly fast. The slowest thing on this page is figuring out how tall the data actually ends up being by reading offset height. The XSLT is really, really sweet. So, and nicely, if you don't have JavaScript on, this thing degrades to a regular table. So you start with a table, you end with a table, and you either get the component or you don't. And for those interested, this is a sort of a classic way of viewing a dual DOM for a component. You keep an XML DOM handy so that you can transform it, and then you keep a presentation DOM on the screen that you can read properties off of if you want to look at values in cells or anything. So another neat demo here is just that this presentation itself was made with a project called Ajax S, which also has links on the slideshow. And this was done by Robert Nyman. And it's just one big XML file that does JavaScript XSLT to produce the thing you're looking at. So that's kind of fun. And so now we're going to kind of talk about some stuff that's upcoming. Just this quarter, the XQuery, XSLT2, and XPath2 are now officially W3C recommendations. Probably another reason to pay some attention to XSLT, though we don't have XSLT2 transformation capabilities in the browsers yet. You can use it on the server, and it's good to know. XSLT2 is definitely a push in the right direction. Now you can use regular expressions and a load of other great stuff. There's also been last call placed on the XBL, which is the XML binding language. It does something similar to XSLT by applying rule-based manipulation for data, and it actually does some things that are interestingly different. So I would encourage you to take a look at XBL if it's not something you know about already. The other thing I should mention, too, with these components, one of the nicer things you can do is you can either run your XSLT on your client in the browser, as I did there, but that's not always the best approach. It's just one that works, and I found it would be pretty cool, and that's what got me interested in it. But XSLT is more classically done on the server, and that's usually what people think of. So the nice part is you write this, grueling XSL style sheet that you work on, you get it working in your browser. Well, now you can actually take the same piece of code, put it on the server, and run it in Python, Ruby, PHP, Perl, anything, because everybody has access to XSLT. So whatever work you put in on the front is actually transferable. And that was the thing that really attracted me to it. I wrote the component originally in PHP, and then, okay, I've got somebody building a Ruby project, and they want to use this cool grid. Well, they can't do it unless I spend a whole bunch of time re-implementing all this code. And now with XSLT, I can just hand them the XSL style sheet, tell them how to format a very simple table, which they're definitely capable of doing, and voila. So another thing we're going to talk about is Freya, and there's a demo for Freya called the Form Builder. Freya is a framework that is built using the Sarissa library. Sarissa library actually takes and makes doing browser-side XSLT a little easier. It wraps all the IE calls to look like Firefox's calls, and those are actually the accepted standard. So it sort of fixes the fact of trying to do this in Internet Explorer. In Freya, the XSL file is the view in the modern view control pattern, and there's a handy demo of the Freya form builder, and so we're going to look at that. So what's nifty about this is, I've seen a couple of form builders lately online. It seems to be a popular sort of thing to create. And you can drag these things around over here, of course, get rid of them if you'd like to. But it's actually using XSLT to do all the transformations of the content you're seeing. So it's not refreshing. It's just running XSLT. And if you don't, in fact, have XSLT available on your browser, like say you're in Safari, this will actually go back and run it on the server. So Freya sort of helps make it easier for you. Hello. So, you can kind of go in and play with these things. And we'll look. If you look at the phone field down here, I'm going to just get rid of one of the pieces. It's kind of nice. So if you want to, send your friends here and they need to make a web form, this is sort of an easy way to do it. You can start adding and creating form elements. I want to call this the email now field. Save it, go back to preview, and there it is. So it sort of helps you make forms, a pretty common thing to do on the web. This is something I talked to a fellow last night. M. David Peterson is a blogger for O'Reilly, and he's very active in the XSLT community. And he was, I said, hey, what would you want me to show if I could show something you're working on? And he is working on something that he calls browser-based XML at browserbasedxml.com. And what's nifty about this is it's essentially using XSLT to do browser detection, because you can, in the underlying JavaScript, in XSLT, you can detect the type of transformer that's there. All of the transformers have different titles. Well, I can go ahead and view the source on this page and show you anyway. Well, maybe not. the internet is not going to cooperate with my demo, which is a little bit of a bummer, but we can keep going. Essentially, it's just neat that you can actually supply an XML file, detect what kind of browser you're using, and serve different JavaScript, CSS, or however you'd like, to the browser in question. His contention is that it's actually easier to maintain the different implementations for XSLT in different files, sort of use a boilerplate and go re-implement one for Opera, re-implement one for IE, as opposed to using Sarissa to wrap all of the calls. Because of all the if-else blocks, you end up saving yourself a lot of speed. So, anyhow, that's something he's working on. Another thing that is sort of a showcase for XSLT is something called GIRDL. And GIRDL is a markup format for gleaning resource descriptions from dialects of languages. That's what it stands for. It's for getting RDF data out of XML and XHTML documents using explicitly associated transformation algorithms, usually represented in XSLT. So GIRDL is currently on last call as well for recommendation at the W3C. And GIRDL is part of the Semantic Web Project. GIRDL does, you have an XML or an XHTML file that you put namespace declarations in at the top, pointing to XSL files. And through that, you can extract RDF from the page. There's a really cool demo of this. This is just a basic homepage, Joe Lambda's homepage. And the idea is this is a page that's been marked up in with GIRDL syntax. It's basically, and all that means is that at the very top there's a few namespace declarations. And I can get the source because it's cached. So this is the part up here. We're pointing to transformation XSL files. One for FOF, one for Creative Commons, one for GeoURL. And the point is that down here in this document, it's marked up with all of these syntaxes. These are, you know, or you could have one for microformats as well. And the point is you want to extract this data from the document itself. You want to go get, you know, intelligence and relationships out of the presentation layer that are embedded there. And as you see, we'll go down. So you see here, here's an anchor with a rel tag of FOF knows. So Bill Fu and GBaz, these are people that Joe Lambda knows. So by running the GIRDL demo is actually linked to down here. And if it works quickly, I won't go to my cached version of it. And I'll show you how it works. Probably won't. All you end up with when you run this is the output is a RDF file. So I'll just open it because I have it handy. And you can see it. No, here we go. So what you're looking at here is just the output. This was not designed for human consumption. This is designed for machine consumption. So it's an RDF file. And you see it's constructed a whole set of nodes to represent the RDF of that document. It's extracted something like intelligence based on the markup. And the next demo actually shows you why you would want to do this. And it's probably the coolest demo I've found to why this stuff would be cool. XSLT is sort of a means to an end. It's a way of getting to something you want to reuse. It repurposes. So we've made this RDF file. Now what? There's a project at MIT in the Simile project called Welkin. And this is just freaking cool. So hopefully we can get it a little bit of internet bandwidth to run it. And if not, I have it downloaded. Yeah, sure. Let me get... steal a little bandwidth here. Okay. So this, you actually click the link and it engages the Java engine, which hopefully if you have a JRE installed, you can just click this magic OK button. And it's pretty neat that works. So it pulls up. There's a good user documentation on the site that shows you what this does, but I'm just going to show you the magic of what it does. So we're going to go back now. We're going to find Joe Lambda's RDF file because that's what this program reads. And now Welkin's constructed a visual representation of the relationships between the nodes. You can walk through, drag nodes around, see what these pieces are, how they might be connected. Essentially, just another representation of the data. Move this over because the visualization, to me, is the funnest part. And so you can see how things might be connected, like the Creative Commons license, back to the page about it, back to the notice about it, and its drawing lines, which, you know, you can do with the RDF, which you wouldn't have been able to do with the XHTML page of Joe Lambda has online right now. You can drag this thing around, make cool visualization stuff. You can even click this magic start button, and it starts animating the activity, the current activity of these nodes, and pulling them together based on what's on the net and how they might be related and how closely they're related. So this is just eye candy. It's fun to play with, but it's a good example of why, you know, playing with XSLT gets you somewhere that's immediately very different than where you started, just some guy's web page and some connections about him. Now you have something that's a little richer than just text, and it's sort of more visual. So that's my last slide. There's a list of links and resources if you're interested in learning about how to do XSLT in your browser and just learning more things about it. I've collected a pretty long list of everything that was helpful to me here, and I hope you find some use for it. Thanks very much.
Okay, I just wanted to check and make sure everyone caught the thing that I thought was really innovative in Lindsay's presentation, which is that, some people think XML is dead, but when you look at a browser, you're looking at XML. Browsers take HTML off the server and they convert it to XML in the browser, and you can take that XML and you can transform it in the browser. So you can take the page, and using XSLT, you can create any kind of different page. Who here has tried that technique before? Taking the HTML, in other words, the XML that's in a page and transforming it on the client side. So it's a very powerful technique. The point is that XSLT, it's here to stay. It's a very powerful technology. It's in the client, and it's being underutilized, and there's a lot of things you can do with it, and if you add it to your toolkit, it's a very powerful thing. Okay, so once again, here's the bullet points. Why you should have XSLT in your toolkit. Is this picking up okay? It's actually fairly easy to learn and program if you take a functional approach, and we'll take a quick look at that. We don't have time to go through a lot of code, but we'll show you some examples that'll kind of spotlight the difference between a procedural and a functional approach. And there's a fast processor built into all major browsers. Use Sarissa, which is available at SourceForge, very easy to use, and you can put that to use very easily. This is the sort of the outline of the slides. These slides will be online. I'm not really going to go through all the slides because people might go into a catatonic trance. There's too much code and so forth, and it's XSLT. But if you want, you can go back and look at things in more detail. There's some software mentioned. Here's the links. This will all be online, and it'll be online here at screenbooks.net SXXW. It's already online, actually. Okay, now this is for the few beginners here. XSLT, it's a programming language with an XML syntax. It's not very pretty to look at, even in a very simple example like this. You can use it to take XML, which means not just, you know, data XML, it means a web page, and convert it to something else. It's a functional programming language, what that means, functional programming versus procedural. Basically, functional means that you're describing an outcome. You're not describing how to get there. You're not saying, hey, do this, do this, do this. You're just saying, look, when this happens, I want that to happen. When this comes in, I want that to come out. And it's a different way of doing things. A lot of people have gotten into XSLT from, you know, CSS or from procedural programming languages, Java, whatever, and they don't write XSLT in a functional way, they write it in a procedural way. And that tends to be hard to read, hard to maintain, and a major problem. Now, so for an example XML, here's some example XML. This presentation, like Lindsay's, this is another program, a desktop application that creates an XML, XSL presentation. Basically, it creates this sbook.xml file. You can see here's all the text for the presentation. And then all of the output is created with a nifty, nice, clean-looking XSLT. So, yeah. Did I lose anybody there? So let's have a big hand for Internet Explorer.
You should debug that.
Yeah. That's Internet Explorer, not XSLT, by the way. Just as an example, this slide is actually created from an XML file. All the output, like this, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, this is a page, blah, blah, dot HTML. It creates, a thumbnail page, a page with all the text on it. It's all the output's created with XSL. So just an example of XML being used as a content holder, with XSL being used to generate all the output. Okay, quick run through for a very simple style sheet. I'm just going to zip through this. Most people seem to know some XSLT. This is just for beginners to kind of see that, hey, this isn't really that bad. The XML file is the one we were just, it's an XML file for this presentation that we're looking at. You can see there's something called a screen book. There's pages, page, page, page. Each page has some text in it. So you make a template that matches the root of the XML and put some stuff inside it. And then you run the Xeilon processor. This is just one way to do it. You need a processor to take your XML and apply the XSLT to it. You can either do it in the browser, or you can do it in a command line on the server side. This is a command line tool, and you get something that looks like that, because your XML had a whole bunch of stuff in it, but when the processor looked in the style sheet, it found a match to the root node, and inside that root node was Hello World, and that's what you get. So let's try to do something a little bit more interesting. This time in our root node, we'll say apply templates. That means when the processor matches the root template on the input, it's going to hit this apply templates, which means go back to the XML and keep going down top to bottom, left to right. And then we add another template, which is going to match up with a page element. And we have some stuff in there. If you don't follow this, don't worry about it. It's basically the value of the stuff that's in that node, and then an HR element. And now we've gotten this output that is all of the page elements outputted with an HR tag. So just an example, XML input. You make templates to match up with particular elements in the input, and that's it. It can be very simple. This is an example of the functional approach. Basically, there wasn't any for each there. There were no looping, or basically the processor goes through the whole style, goes through the whole input for you. You don't have to write code to go start going down through all the XML. Use the processor to just find matching template elements that match with particular input elements. Okay, now I had a question I wanted to ask. I've been doing XSLT since before it was a spec, back when it was a Microsoft specific thing. And it's been an interesting ride. I've gotten steady contracting work most of the time. I've done some Java contracting too, and trying to stay out of that forever. But how many people here hate XSLT? Anybody here? Okay, so we got, how many people's bosses hate XSLT? I've had a lot of problems because I've been called in, to major projects where there's been some huge XSLT going on, and the people who are at the top of the project are so bitter and angry about XSLT that they want me to fix it and then get the hell out of there, because they're going to rip it out and they're going to replace it. The last place was like they replaced XSLT with Tapestry. And I think they're going to go out of business. But they had this huge set of XSLT files, and for every new customer, they had to make a new set. And nobody understood why the XSLT didn't work, for one thing, and it was thousands of lines. And what had happened was that people who had gotten into it weren't really programmers. They didn't know the functional way of doing things, and they wrote very, you know, elaborate XSLT, and nobody was looking at their code. And we'll cover that in a sec. So XSLT has a lot of power, and it's had a lot of power for a long time, but it hasn't caught on the way people like me expected it to. It's got huge advantages. I hope that Lindsay, you know, has kind of shown some of the advantages, but disadvantages. It's not easy to write. There's no kind of good WYSIWYG tool. There's been some attempts at it that I haven't found very successful. One's by Exelon. And it's a functional language. Functional languages are hard for people to get used to if they're used to procedural programming. And it's not easy to read. And this is the real killer. Here's the XSLT for this one slide presentation. And it's not particularly complicated. It's just a slide, but it's not something you're going to sit down and, curl up next to the fire with and, kind of get engrossed in. This is comparatively clean XSLT. So the problem is, since it's not readable, people don't do code reviews, people don't check up on each other, and you have a guy, sitting over in a cubicle, slowly losing his mind to making XSLT. Nobody knows that he's actually gone over the cliff because no one wants to even look at this stuff. So that's been the problem with XSLT. The question is there some kind of solution to that? Well, I'm going to run through one tool that I think is a solution. It has solved the problem for me, and maybe you'll find it useful. I don't think that a GUI tool has been or will be invented for XSLT, but there's another tool, which is a tool that came out of literate programming. Literate programming, anybody heard of that? If you've heard of it, you might be interested in this tool. It's really quite unusual. Literate programming is an interesting concept. It's the idea that you write the documentation first, and it reads like a book, and then you embed the code inside the documentation and have a separate program extract that code. And it could be in a different order. It's the opposite of Java docs. Java docs is you got your code and you embed the documentation in that. Literate programming is you write English. And, maybe let's say the error checking is not that interesting, so that's chapter 14. And then a separate program is going to go through and extract the error checking and put it back in all the places that it goes. And there's this program called Leo. Anybody heard of that? All right. It's a pretty popular on SourceForge. It's not like a totally arcane tool, but there aren't many people using it, and it's kind of different. And what it does is it makes literate programming work with outlines, and it's particularly good for languages like XSLT, which are just not very readable. It's also good for projects like AJAX, where you've got your XSLT file, you have your JavaScript file, you have some HTML, XML, all little things, all of which tend to be not very well documented. So let's take a look. Just going to run through what Leo does. Just run through the demo. Hopefully this will make sense and intrigue you. Might not be enough to quite clear up all questions, but let's give it a shot. Leo opened up, looks like this. Two panes. We're going to import that style sheet we were just looking at, that big, Perry thing we were looking at. And so now we have up here on the top, it says, here's the file name. On the bottom is the entire contents of the file. So, okay, so far, so good. So we got a little file viewer here. Now, next thing we're going to do, we're going to start chunking the file. We're going to like basically fold the paper or like give it, you know, take little sections and give them names. So we've got a bunch of parameters here. So what we're going to do is we're going to chunk those. What you do is you just enter those like angle, and whatever you want, params. Then you select the stuff underneath it, Control-Shift-S for section. And now the section has been chunked. You still have the entire file showing down here, but it's the params have been folded under a nice little label. And you can see the contents of that label by opening up this node here. So the params just got pushed. There's in the outline view, you can see there's the params. And then when you click on that node, you see the contents of that node. So if you want to look at the params, if you have a question about that, you look at that. Let's keep going. So variables, there's a bunch of variables. We're going to chunk those. They're chunked. Root template, going to chunk those. They're chunked. It's chunked, et cetera, et cetera. Now, up here is the file, and down here is the entire file. It's just that it's been chunked. And we're looking at the entire file, and we're understanding it. It's now has a top-level understandable view. It's understandable at a glance. And if there's anything you don't understand, well, you just open up that node, and if it isn't sufficiently chunked, you chunk that too. So let's do that. Okay, you look at the page template. That's still a pretty big hairy ball of code. So again, well, this time it's not so obvious. Well, okay, actually, this time that was obvious, head and body. We found the head and body element. We chunked those. And now there's still more in the body element. There's still quite a bit of stuff, and you scroll through it, and you find identifiable pieces, and you chunk them. You say, hey, okay, I get that. I understand that. Put a label on it, fold it, and then pretty soon the whole file is easy to understand. What we do here is down at the bottom of this piece of the file, there's this thing for Google AdSense, AdSense. And okay, we'll chunk that. Then right below that, you can see there's a copyright, a div copyright. Okay, chunk that. Right above it, we got something that says page count. That's the... Now remember, this style sheet that I'm going through and chunking here, it's the same style sheet that was used to create this presentation. So you see this page count down here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, that's it. So we'll chunk that. And now above there's a bunch of stuff. What the heck is that? Okay, well, that's the footer, right. Actually, yeah, this is the footer. The page count actually is something that's hidden. So got rid of that. Now that's chunked. That makes sense. And right above it, we're going to reformat this stuff. We can see this is the slide content. Chunk that. Keep going. Now the body section is understandable at a glance. So this, to me, is sort of like the magic bullet for XSLT. It's something that if you're worried about the XSLT programmer's out of his mind because, his code is just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger and no one understands what it's doing, you can just have him make an outline for you. Now, the cool thing about this is that when you look at the style sheet now that we just finished chunking, what Leo did was Leo put all of that outline information that we saw, it puts it in comments, there's embedded in comments, so it's still in the XSL file. So you've got your XSL file, which you can use, programming, but then you can open up in Leo, and then boom, there's all that outline. So that's like a metastructure. So metastructures is what saves the day. Okay, so that's a cool tool. Running out of time here.
No, IE died on you again.
Yeah, that's a feature. Got enough time for the my times?
Oh, yeah, go.
Okay, now, XSLT is cool. I think we've established that fact at this point, beyond anybody's doubt. Leo's a good way to solve some of the political problems and the problems of coding with it. Let's take a look at a specific example. MyTimes.com is a site that's going to be opening in April. There's a closed beta right now. And you can see it kind of looks like a lot of Ajax portals. It's got these little gadgets. It's like the Google homepage, if you've seen that. This is the existing closed beta, and there's gadgets like this New York Times top story, and you can like drag them and drop them. It's pretty cool. You can make your own customized content. The good thing about this is that it's the New York Times, so it's got some really good content. And they've got some extra features since they're the New York Times. Oh, also, if you're not familiar with these kinds of things, usually on a gadget, there's a little box you can pull down to customize, add, you know, user preferences. In this case, it's like display up to, you know, how many headlines, display, headlines only, whatever. You can add other widgets as you choose. The cool thing about the Times is that they've got, you know, journalists that are participating in not just, of course, making content, but also recommending widgets or, you know, selecting things and adding extra content for the My Times page. So that's a kind of a nifty thing. We're rolling out a new site. The closed beta is not going to be rolled out in its existing code base because it's not scaling very well. And we've also done some other things to make it easier to program these things. When this rolls out, everybody here is going to be able to go on to this site and develop your own widgets, because it's of the widgets frameworks I've seen, this is probably the easiest to sit down and make a functioning widget. It's very, very easy. But here's what's going to be new. As before, we have the widgets. And the difference is that now widgets are actually not just widgets. The widgets that you'll be able to write, you can actually make like this tabs up here. That's just a regular widget in the MyTimes framework. It means widgets can contain widgets. So you can actually make some pretty complicated things. And you can make widgets that don't look like your typical little widget. Like, for example, this here's the slideshow. There's a Times Reader, which is a .NET application, if you're running Windows, which is pretty cool. And if you download that, you can see there's this slideshow. Anyway, the slideshow is going to be on the web now because we can make widgets that are any size. And this, what this does is just goes through all the pictures that were in the Daily Times, and you can click on them. It's pretty cool. Now, we're running out of time, so I'm just going to zip through this real quick. But making a widget can be done either with JSON feed or XML. Basically, you can use any feed like you know, RSS or whatever, or you can choose from the Times gives you a bunch of you know, canned sources like weather, movies, and so forth. And now, I guess most people know that Gmail, for example, has a feed. You can access your Gmail account through an RSS feed. And the Times takes care of all that for you. You just have to when you make a widget, you just enter a source and a few other properties, and you say Gmail, and it's going to do the authentication and all that kind of stuff. So the back end takes care of authentication and a lot of the you know, plumbing that you normally would have to do. All you need to do is basically make some, you know, put a face on this thing, and XSL is the way to go. So the way the Times works is if the feed is coming in as JSON, you use an HTML template, and the slides show you that if you want to look at that later. If the feed's coming in as XML, then you can use an XSL style sheet. Here's what the Gmail feed looks like. The entries have been closed. I just opened one up. So you've got, you know, it's an Atom feed, and it's like title, blah, 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 entry, entry, entry. And when you want to make an XSL style sheet to look like this, all you have to do, if you're doing the functional approach, is you look at each one of these things. And then you look at the input, and you think, how do I get from here to here? So I know that I want to loop through, I want to have these entries look a certain way, so I'm going to make a template element for that entry. Or like this inbox 2. Okay, you go back to here. Here's full count 2. We want to get over from there, we want to get to this, and we want a link on that because you want to click and go to our inbox. So what you do is you start with your input, look at individual elements, and then just make individual template elements in your XSL, and then you make a root node to tie things together, and you're done. No procedural programming, no looping. The XSLT processor does all the work for you. So real quickly, like 30 more seconds here, let's look at how this inbox thing gets put into the output. It's right here. See, inbox select value of... Leo makes this very easy to follow. We're basically looking at just that one template. It's a match to Atom full count, which was the thing that was that was the name of the element on the input. And here's the link that we want, which is just a hard-coded thing. some of these variables, you'll see from the slides how the Times takes care of all that. A lot of the back end just gives you all these variables like username, and you can also make your own custom ones. And the Times takes care of like prompting people and, you know, putting them in a database. So all you need to do is make your style sheet and present this stuff. So we're almost done. This is a template that's going to match that one particular thing. You make a few more templates to match the rest of them, and then to make your style sheet, you just need to make a, where is it? A root node. And that looks like this. You could actually do it simpler than this, but anyway, the root node template says, okay, go apply all the other little templates that match everything up. So powerful technology, and this is one use of it. So we got a few minutes for questions.
Question.
Sure.
A lot of sites out there will actually benchmark inner HTML as orders of magnitude faster than using the same HTML DOM operations. So I'm curious, how do you compare in-browser XSLT transformations, the speed of those, to inner HTML or those DOM operations?
Yeah.
Am I on again? Hey. Actually, when I was building the data grid component, Quirks Mode has some great documentation about the speed of inner HTML, and I actually do just stuff the contents of the transformation back into inner HTML. So it's faster, it works great, and you end up with a long string at the end of the transformation process anyway. You have the XML DOM. You could go down and add it all in JavaScript DOM back to the document. It's just slower.
But you would use them in pair, like side-by-side?
I do, yes. Do the transformation. You serialize it to a string. It's a native method in Firefox and backed in Sarissa for IE, and instantly shove that back in. It's fairly quick, too. Serializing the XML string is fast because it's well-formed.
Thanks.
Sure. There's some good benchmarks, actually. If you have Firebug installed and you go load up the data grid component, open the Firebug console, because there's a ton of info debugging in there that can show you the speed of each operation in there, and you can see, without running the profiler, how fast the XSLT transformation is. Even on something like 20,000 rows, it scales fairly linearly. So it's kind of amazing that way. And yes, still shove the string back in our HTML, especially with bigger ones. Well, the advantage of GIRDLE is you can use different... Excuse me? Oh, okay, thanks. What would be the advantage of using GIRDLE to extract information when you can already do this with microformats by embedding it? It's just an example. Why... The advantage of well, all GIRDLE does is provide you a way to it points to transformation files that say, hey, I've embedded Creative Commons content, I've embedded FOV content, and I've embedded microformats in this page. There's an XSL file for each one of those. Go use it if you come to this page with a GIRDLE-enabled client. So it's an extension. It's actually one of the cooler ways to say, okay, that's neat that microformats are on the page. You can go use Tails or Operator and just look at them again, but you can probably see them in the presentation. But now you want to do something different and visualize it differently than just text or just output it. You want to do, say, the simile thing. You want to see some weird live visualization. With RDF, you can actually do that. RDF is particularly well formatted. And the output of GIRDLE is RDF as opposed to microformats, which is just, you know, it's just the text on the page. So GIRDLE gets you RDF through XSL. Are there any more? Yep.
It seems like we spoke earlier about XML or XSLT being a functional simple procedural language. However, when I've been using it recently, it seems like there's some things that you cannot avoid taking a procedural approach at, especially things that require recursion. Is that true? Or please tell me.
Well, I mean, just, you know, I mean, basically recursion is how you avoid doing, you know, loops. Well, okay. Actually, the thing about the procedural versus functional. It's somewhat of not so clear cut, because sometimes, like for example, when you're trying to put a comma at the end of a list and you have to use position, so you know that's one thing. But Michael Kay, he's got this big book, XSLT, you know, and he contrasted two different ways of doing XSLT. One is fill in the blanks, the other is rule based. And fill in the blanks is where you're kind of like thinking of it in a typical HTML template thing, where you did your HTML and Dreamweaver or whatever. Now you just go pop in the placeholders. Rule based is very different. Rule based is more like what I was trying to give some examples of. And you can kind of mix them, but you always want to be thinking in terms of the rule based one and trying to go as much as possible. Basically, if your XSLT is not elegant, I mean, it terse compared to some other language, you're probably not doing it right. And also you should really try to avoid loops. If there's a loop in there, there's usually can be avoided, unless like some of these, like when you have to use position and you know. Well, you know, recursion isn't necessarily a procedural thing. It's you know that's so. But send me, you know, if you have a puzzle, just send me an actual example. XSLT is sort of like my little, you know, hobby. And if you've got a puzzle you want to send me.
We have time for one more question. Shoot.
Is what you just said fill in the blank versus?
Rule-based. Did that?
Yeah.
Well, it's like this. Fill in the blanks is wrong. Don't do it. It's for newbies. It's a mistake that it was ever even put in there. The reason why it was really kind of, they wanted to make it easy to learn, so they made this easy to learn mode, which is wrong. And then people learned it wrong. And then the wrong people got into it, people who aren't really thinking in programming terms. And
right.
Yeah, yeah, that's because it's not Smarty. And the funny thing, if you look at this, well, if you look at the slides for the MyTimes has got a Smartiest looking thing for the JSON HTML template thing. So yeah, we're using that. But then when you go over to the XML thing, that goes out the window, and you use this rule based, you know, style sheets, and it's clean. The other thing I didn't mention is that you go with rule based. Things are modularized rather than this big thing of like, yeah, you know, here's what I want, and it's like, I want this, and I want that, and I want that, and I want that. Now put them together, and since you've got these different things, you can put them in a bag or put them in a library, you know, use them in different. It's a very powerful, it's not that hard, it's actually easier. You just have to think about it, and then you can really see how powerful XSLT is.
All right, that's the end of our panel. Thank you all for coming out early, and have a great time at South by Southwest.